Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host, also the host of the TV show Wing Shooting USA. Hope you'll listen to the podcast and watch the TV show. Currently available on about 200 stations around the country and soon to be back on Pursuit Channel on New Year's Day. Got a great discussion in store for you today. The perfect time of year to talk about hunting in our southern western United States, specifically Arizona. Tips and tactics, advice that will probably be relevant no matter where you are and what you're chasing. Of course, the usual public access tip in our This Land Is Your Land feature, a handle it suggestion for dog strategy, and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. So stick around and turn up the volume, tell your friends. Hope you will enjoy the rest of the Upland Nation podcast as we get rolling. You know, I was reminded a while back, we always are, about once or twice a year, somebody says, oh, 6 degrees of separation, Kevin Bacon, blah, blah, that whole story. I don't know if he ever really even said that, but the degrees of separation in the bird hunting world, the dog world, are way less than six. And let me give you one great example. And think about your own, because I'll tell you, you must have experienced something like this in your hunting career in the last few months. I was hunting a desolate section of southeast Oregon, about as far as you can go without being in Idaho, with a good friend of mine from my training group, and we were exploring some new country, and we split up, hunted our separate ways. I got back to the truck a little bit sooner than Ben did, and cracked a beer and was relaxing at this pretty little pond where we had parked that had been a sheep herder's station, if you will, home base, a little dugout cabin, if you will, and a willow corral and some other cute stuff. Maybe I'll put that up on the Facebook page at some point. But anyway, I'm drinking a beer, listening to the birds chirp and the wind blow gently through the old trees that are still standing. And up comes a white pickup truck. Looks a lot like mine. Look inside, and the guy in the passenger seat looks like a lot like my hunting partner. Sure enough, he piles out and he says, hey, I was walking up the road. This guy drove by. He said, where are you headed? I said, I'm going up there to meet with Scott. And the guy said, hey, I know Scott. I'll take you up there. Well, it ended up being a very enjoyable hour or so, trading stories about places we'd both been and dog breeds and people we knew that they knew and vice versa. And isn't that what it's all about at the end of the day? Luckily, we had plenty of adult beverages, and we enjoyed those to great effect while watching the sun go down in a place that, I'll just tell you that it's one of those magical spots that we are all searching for while we are hunting. So think about it for a moment or two, and you probably can relish one of your own memories along those lines. And that's, just one more reason to go hunting one more time. All right, the Upland Nation podcast is brought to you in part by Sage and Breaker Mercantile. Learn all about their products at sageandbreaker.com. And the reason I encourage you to do exactly that is they've got a long list of new products coming on online very soon. And the only way to get a hold of the information before everyone else does is to sign up for their newsletter email list. sageandbreaker.com makes the finest heirloom quality gun cleaning and gun care products, a cut above the highest caliber, however you want to describe it. Visit sageandbreaker.com. And once you've ordered all your gun care products, head on over to dogtra.com. Take a closer look at the Pathfinder GPS collar combo. Now, this is nice for a lot of reasons. The first one is you use your cell phone. You don't have to buy a handheld transmitter. You use your cell phone. It makes life a lot simpler, and you always have your cell phone with you, don't you? Learn more about the Pathfinder at dogtra.com. All right, joining me on the line right now, where are you in Arizona, Phil Wexler of Border to Border Outfitters?
I'm about 1.2 miles from Mexico, south of Tucson, south of Sierra Vista, in a little zip code called Palominas.
Yeah, well, bienvenidos a Mexico. And I imagine you do have to speak a little while you're down there, don't you?
You know, if I do, it's normally just to myself or the dogs.
Yeah, that's funny. The voices in my head do that too.
Yeah.
So you're down there, and one of the reasons I thought it would be fun to talk with you this time of year is I can bet money it's warmer there than it is almost everywhere else.
Sure.
We're all jealous of that, and that's probably why a lot of people call you guys. And we'll talk about your whole hunting season and where you start and all that in a moment. But right now you're down there in Arizona. How's the hunting these days?
Well, it's great. You know, my season or our season really started back in September. Patrick went up to South Dakota. I hung back here in Arizona and did some dove hunting, and then I went off did some personal hunting really all over, just got back to Arizona maybe 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got out a few times, and you know, it's like you mentioned, it's still pretty warm, but there's a good amount of birds.
Well, tell me what the allure is to hunting in Arizona. That is something that, you know, a lot of people want to do. I want to do it. I've actually blown off about three different invitations there. I finally got to New Mexico a couple of seasons ago. But what is it about Arizona and those birds?
Well, I think, I mean, really the allure is the Mearns quail. You know, Arizona has the three species of quail down here, Gamble's quail, scaled quail, or, you know, as New Mexico calls them, blue quail, and the Mearns quail. And we're really the only state besides New Mexico that has huntable Mearns quail, and we just have so much more land and Mearns quail down here than you know, the other states.
Well, tell me about the terrain out there. You're hunting for Mearns in particular.
Sure.
Describe a typical hunt, where you're going and what kind of vegetation.
Yeah, well, they live at 5,000 to 6,000 feet of elevation. So it's actually, you know, people think Arizona, they think cactus and desert, but it's steep, rocky hills, rolling hills, tall grass. You know, they're called sky islands. So they're just the big hills that just jut out of nothing, and you know, the Mearns live on these little sky islands.
You ever see them along with the blues or the gambles, or are they pretty much distinct in terms of their territories?
Now, normally they're pretty separate. The Mearns are pretty separate from gambles or scale quail. But that being said, you know, no one tells the birds what elevation they're allowed to live at, apparently. And you know, I've been out and found scale quail and Mearns quail, or Mearns quail and gambles quail in the same little walk. So.
They're such a beautiful bird. What is so appealing to you about that Mearns quail?
I think it's the flush.
Yeah.
In my opinion, out of all the birds that I hunt, I enjoy hunting them with dogs the most. They hold very tight, and you know, the flush is just all the action's right in your face. You don't have Mearns quail running out from your dog. You're not chasing birds down trying to get them to fly. You know, there's a good chance you're stepping right on the covey before they get up. And like I like to tell my hunters, when you shoot your two shots on your first covey rise of Mearns quail and you miss, reload as quick as you can, because there's more coming up.
Oh, nice. And they're just, you know, they're just so unusual for us. I know there are some other odd looking quail further south from you, but mm-hmm. but in the United States, they've got to be the most vividly colored and unusual looking bird. Even their head shape looks to me like it's different than everything else. How do your dogs handle these birds? They've got to have their challenges, especially in that tall cover.
Sure. I think the biggest challenge is more of the terrain, less than the birds. The birds themselves are, like I said, they hold tight. They dig on the ground, so they leave a lot of scent for the dogs. You know, as long as your dog goes on point and doesn't move, those birds will be there for you when you get up to the dog.
You know, on my TV show, a lot of people will see.
You have a TV show? Just kidding.
Yeah, you can watch it every day somewhere.
Yeah,
And careful, or you'll never be invited on it. There are people who expect dogs to be finished in any number of ways, and I'm making air quotes around finished right now, but as a pro, and I try to explain this, probably once a week to somebody. As a pro, there are different priorities than there are if you're trying to win a field trial or something like that. To what level do you want to bring your dogs to hunt these quail?
Well, I want to be very clear. I don't consider myself a pro at any of this. I fully believe in, remaining teachable. As soon as you think you know everything, you're not going to learn anything new. But you're absolutely right. There's different definitions of broke depending on what you're trying to do and depending on excuse me, who's breaking the dogs. What I like my dogs to do is point birds and hold all to the release. Now, that being said, 3 months into the season, a lot of the dogs are breaking on the shot. And there's pluses and minuses for that. The plus side is you lose a lot less birds. They're on those birds when they're shot. They get back to you quicker. The downside is if you have hunters or clients and they're not as experienced shooting over dogs, you don't want your dogs moving when their shot's being fired.
Yeah, it is a two-way street, and that is the fundamental problem. I've been at places where their argument for letting a dog break at the shot is, well, we can just cover more ground and we can kill more birds, and that's what leads to the big tips around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand all of those, and so
In
just
a perfect world, my dogs would hold all the way through to the release, but I can't promise you that happens every time.
Yeah, and the dog and the birds would drop stone dead right where you could all see them too.
That's
But
right. Yep.
that's the problem, all right. The desert, if you will, the southwestern United States. I don't care whether you're in those sky islands or you're in the desert. It's warmer, it's drier. The terrain and the flora and fauna are different. Everything from javelinas to Cholla cactus. Are there things that you guys do to protect dogs against all of those things that maybe we ought to do that we're not aware of?
That's tough to say. People always ask me, what do you do for this or what do you do for that? And the truth is you can't nerf proof your hunting dog's world. If you wanted to do that, then keep your dog inside, keep them on the couch, and they still have a chance of eating a chicken bone at Christmas and dying. As far as snakes, every year we snake break our dogs. There's a gentleman in Phoenix, a friend and mentor, Guy Mollicone Kennels, and he does that for me every year. We run into snakes all the way through February sometimes. Javelinas, Patrick has a couple stories he can tell you, but they're pretty nasty. We've had some pretty bad encounters with javelinas and dogs. Luckily, all the dogs have made it. There's really nothing you can do besides just kind of be aware and always watch your dog and your surroundings. There, I mean, the list of dangers goes on and on, and it's not just Arizona specific. It's anywhere. You're hunting. There's cars. There's other hunters. There's big animals. Your dog could go into Mexico, and you're not allowed to go get him. What do you
Now,
do then when your dog's on point on the other side of
that is a good
the
question, and I'm sure you've had to answer that, but I
fence?
won't ask you to tell me what you did because it might be prosecutable in one or both countries. Well, number one, Phil, you're referencing Patrick a few times. That's Patrick Flanagan, the other half of Border to Border Outfitters, and you guys, you in effect, you lead parallel lives part of the year, and then you converge on Arizona at one point, and we'll get into that too. But are there ways to carry enough water for your dogs, or do you just come back to the truck a lot when you run out? I mean, how this is, I hunt Southeast Oregon, and it's a lot like your Gambel's quail country. And I can never carry enough water, so we make big loops back to the truck when we run out. What do you guys do?
We do long walks. You know, we could park the truck and not come back to it for 3, 4 hours. Me personally, I carry a gallon and a half minimum of water.
Wow, that's a lot more than me, but I thought I was doing pretty good. But you're running one more than one dog at a time, aren't you?
Normally, yes, yeah,
Yeah,
at least
okay.
two, if not three,
Yeah.
and it's just, you know, you're hunting with other hunters or clients. They may not be in as good a shape as you are, and you gotta keep that in mind. They can have two water bottles in their bag, and they'll finish it in an hour, and you gotta keep your eye on them and make sure they're staying hydrated too. So it's, you know, you're watering your dogs and your hunters.
Well, how do you, I mean, practically speaking, what are you carrying that water in? Maybe we should all have some of those things, whatever they are.
Camelpack,
Yeah.
that carries, you know, you can get a 3 liter or a 4 liter Camelpack, and then just water bottles in the water bottle holders. I'll throw two, three regular water bottles in the game bag. I carry water bottle and first aid kit and, you know, just the dog equipment, and that's about it.
Yeah, I believe it. And then you loop back over. Yeah. Well, good. We're just getting warmed up here at the Upland Nation podcast. That's Phil Wexler with Border to Border Outfitters. Phil, if anybody wants to troll you, what's the website address for you folks?
It's www.border2borderoutfitters.com.
That's pretty clear and concise. If you'll hang on, Phil, I'm going to make a quick announcement or two, and then I want you to join me in discussing our handle it topic for the day. Start thinking about dogs and their feet. But right now, I want the rest of you to be listening to this. ESPAmerica.com. Are you listening? That's the whole point. Electronic Shooter Protection. America.com, ESPAmerica.com. Make your New Year's resolution to keep your hearing intact by wearing their electronic digital hearing protection devices in the field as well as on the range. I started doing this a couple of years back and I will never regret it. So if you couldn't hear most of this message, it's not too late, but it's not going to get any better. So visit ESPAmerica.com and learn more about all of their hearing protection options. All right, I got my duct tape out. That's how I handle a lot of this stuff. I don't know what you do, Phil Wexler at Border to Border Outfitters, but the most popular blog I've ever written on my website had to do with dog boots and what to do instead of using them. You deal with that every day, probably down there, different reasons than I do. We hunt a lot on lava rock and that sort of thing. But I came to a conclusion a while back, and I'll share that with you after you tell me what you guys do at Border to Border Outfitters to keep your dog's pads intact. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
Well, I don't put boots on them. I don't wrap them. You know, blowouts do happen occasionally, and then, you know, the best thing to do is just rest the dog and let the pad heal. I'm a big believer of, you know, you run your dog on dirt and rocks and concrete all its life from a puppy, and it's going to harden its pads. And you know, I have nothing bad to say about boots. Me personally, I've never used them. I've heard from, you know, vets, or I'm sure everyone knows dogs sweat a lot through their feet, and I feel like in Arizona in the heat, it's dangerous trying to cover that up. You know, I'd rather deal with a blown pad than heat exhaustion, and I could be completely wrong with that, but I haven't had an issue so far.
Well, you know, you make a real good point I hadn't thought about, and that is that whole idea. The only place a dog will sweat are the pads on their feet. And if you block that, it's probably going to have an effect on that dog. I want you to ponder this. I've been reading the labels on a whole bunch of these solution sprays and brush-ons things that we can buy for our dogs' pads, and I came to the conclusion that I'm still experimenting with, and that is this. Let me give you an analogy. You got two sticks, one in your right hand, one in your left. The one in your right is old, brittle, hard. You bend it and it cracks. The other one is fresh, just cut off the tree. You bend it and it bends. Conditioning your pads might also mean keeping them flexible, and I'm not going to say soft and delicate, but more flexible than callus-like. I've been playing with that idea, and I think so far I'm liking it. And if it's a revelation for you, I'd love to hear you experiment with that whole idea. But putting all these liquids on a dog's pad, the one I like most right now is called Pad Heal, and the reason for that is you can brush it on instead of spray it. My dog thinks every spray can has a rattlesnake in it. But, you know, it's starting to make a lot of sense with me, and I'm going to start poking around in the veterinary world and see if there is some logic there. In the meanwhile, I'm like you. I sometimes it's easier to carry a spare dog than it is to carry dog boots.
And don't get me wrong, I have used the hoof heel before when I first, start running the dogs at the beginning of the season and they start rubbing some of their pads off, that goes on. But once their pads get conditioned back again, that generally goes away. But I will use that in the event that there is an injured pad. That's the one product that I would say I do use on their pads, some sort of that paint on hoof heel.
Yeah, and there's a couple versions. That one is almost tar-like, and I only warn you against that because if the dog gets into your truck, it ain't coming off. All right, we're talking to Phil Wexler with Border to Border Outfitters. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast, and sure appreciate your listening. Phil, you start your season, your guiding season, maybe your fun season too, in South Dakota. Am I right on that? Somewhere up there?
Almost. The guiding season starts in South Dakota, but my fun season starts a little bit before that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the dove part of your fun season?
Well, this year I did a couple days of dove in the beginning of September, and then I went to Wyoming and chased some chucker, and then I went to Montana and chased some sharptail and a sage grouse, huns, went back to Wyoming, went after the sage grouse, then I went to South Dakota. For the guiding season, went from South Dakota to Minnesota, back to South Dakota, back to Montana, back to South Dakota, and now I'm here in Arizona.
If you are not a card carrying gypsy, you ought to be. I'll tell you, living out of a truck, I bet.
Yep,
been there and done that. Not quite as extensive as you have. Of all of those places, and Wyoming in particular, I've hunted chuckers in Wyoming too. It's just a kick in the pants because nobody does it. If you had to pick one of those places, narrow it down and spend your whole season there, can you possibly even narrow it down?
Truthfully, without a doubt, I'd say South Dakota. Where Patrick and I are at, it's a pretty special place on the reservation, and we have over 200,000 acres all to ourselves. We guide there out of an Orvis endorsed lodge that Steve Grossman owns. And it's a really magical place.
Yeah. In fact, I almost made it there last season. So say hello to Steve the next time you talk with him. Maybe I'll make it next season.
Sure. But
tell me all about the hunting on the reservation, because a lot of people are intrigued by it. There are a lot of misconceptions. There's probably a lot of wacky ideas coming out there. Just describe a typical day hunting prairie birds out there.
You know, it's really like anywhere else you would go. You wake up in the morning and chase after the sharptail in the beginning of the season. The birds are young, and it's not uncommon to have a limit of prairie birds in by 10, 11 o'clock before lunch. Now later in the season, that first snowfall hits, you're seeing birds flock up, flocks of 100, 200, 300 birds, but that's just more eyes on you, and you start running into a lot of issues where the birds won't let you get within a couple hundred yards of them. They're so spooky.
Yeah, it is an early season opportunity, and early in the day probably, because it's probably still going to get up into the 60s or 70s by the middle of the day out there.
It could, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what about a strategy on those birds? Is there anything in particular you can do that can enhance your chances? You need a big running dog? You need to sneak around the far side of the hills? How do you guys do that?
You know, I think the most important thing, and it's not really a secret, it's just have good dogs. Mm-hmm. You can have a big running dog that goes way out there and finds the birds on the horizon, and then you can have a closer working dog that might point of cover too that the bigger running dog missed. So it's just good to have that versatility. When the dog goes on point and you know the birds are running, just start running to where you think they are.
With
Just
an unloaded
get up
gun,
there.
of course.
Yes, always broken and open.
Yeah, people don't understand the immensity of those prairies out there. I mean, I've had dogs at 900 yards point birds in parts of South Dakota. Is there anything we can do to I don't know, make that experience a better experience and more successful?
Which experience would that be?
The whole prairie sharp tail experience. I mean, is
All
there?
right, I see. As far as if you have a dog that's ranging out far and if you, I think it really depends on you as the handler. What are you looking for in your dog? Are you in good shape? Do you enjoy those walks? Then have at it. Go make that 900 yard point and cover that point for your dog. And if that's not something that you want, work with your dog and start handling your dog and get it to what works best for you. I
Neat.
think to have the most success, you need to work well as a team with your dog.
Well, I know I'm Steve Grossman goes by Grouse Man, and so there's probably a lot of that out there. Are you guys sticking around at all? Do you ever shoot any ringnecks while you're out there on the reservation?
Yeah, there's quite a few. And it's not your typical cover. It's a lot of sloughs and river bottoms. Not nearly as much ag as most people think when they think South Dakota pheasants. Yeah, we have a lot of fun on pheasants and sharp tail, and even the occasional hun and prairie chicken.
Yeah, sounding pretty good. I'm gonna do my best to take Steve up on that invitation one more time. In the meanwhile, you're going from here to there and back again, and then then you're turning around going there again. With how many dogs?
It depends. Between Patrick and I, total, gosh, I honestly don't even know what number we're at right now, but I think there's over 30.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, how does a guy travel with, let's just call half of those your dogs and half his dogs? I mean, that's a lot of dogs to travel with from place to place. You got a big trailer or a trailer and a truck, and then more practically speaking, what are the things you have to do that are the biggest challenges moving that much dog flesh around?
Sure, and you haul them as best you can, however you can. Patrick has a very nice horse trailer with a dog room, and that works really well. Dog trailers load kennels in under the truck topper. You just pack it in. I mean, there's really nowhere that you can't drive within 24 hours. So if you gotta cram in the cab with you too, it's not for that long either.
Yeah, always good to have a wingman over there in the passenger seat, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to let one of my short-haired shotgun with me, but I got a little paranoid about accidents, so now she's got to sit in the back. But
Yeah. And are you running all short hairs or you have a little mix in there?
I have quite the mix. Patrick and I both have quite the mix. We have short hairs and pointers and setters and the stray lab and a half Brittany setter. So it's quite the motley crew.
Half Brittany setter. Okay. What do we call those then? There's no doodle in there.
Well, no, that's Patrick's dog, and his we just call him Pace.
I love it. Well, that's good. Probably a beautiful looking dog now that I think about it.
Yeah, he's a good dog.
Oh, neat. Well, what is the biggest challenge when you're moving that many dogs around? Is it getting them out to stretch and take a leak and that sort of thing? I mean, I can't imagine how long that takes.
It's the heat and Denver, Colorado. Those are the two biggest challenges.
And I can understand the second half of that as well as the first half.
Yeah.
But is it the traffic there and just being stuck in it or what?
No, it seems that every time I drive through Colorado, someone always stops and they want to know what kind of hay I'm using, make sure it's
Oh,
certified
yeah.
weed free. They want to know, did the dogs have water in there? And there's no sense in explaining to someone that these dogs are my whole life. My livelihood and my whole life revolves around them. So of course they're well taken care of.
Oh, these are just social warriors
Oh
looking out
yes.
for animal
Every,
rights. Oh,
mul
okay.
mul multiple times, at least once, if not twice, I'll get stopped while I'm in Colorado at a gas station or something like that.
Oh my
But
God.
the heat, is the biggest thing. So you drive a lot at night. You make
Yeah.
sure you have good ventilation. I was told dogs can take a ton of cold, but only an ounce of heat. And you really just need to watch the weather and watch the temperatures and make sure you have adequate stopping places to air them out. I learned a great trick from Patrick. He was on the road for many years. Self-service car washes in an emergency are a great place to get cool. And I've only had to use that once over in Missouri with him. But you just want to know your route, know where you're going, and know where you're stopping.
Yeah, and I'm learning that every year. I'm getting way better at it than I used to be, but now I'm intrigued. You pull in and you just spray down the whole rig. Is that how that works in the car wash?
No, it's more just shade.
Yeah.
It's just the shade. Just the shade.
Oh, great idea. And so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we've talked a little bit, a lot a bit about kind of the more technical aspects of this, but there's you wouldn't be doing it if you didn't love it. What do you love so much about this whole lifestyle?
Really, it's the dogs. I left a very, very good career to do this. And it was just something where the money and the corporate world just wasn't doing it for me. And I was working just so I could run my dogs during hunting season. And I just decided, I'm young enough to screw up so bad I could go back to whatever it was that I was doing. Let's give it a shot. And I love it. I eat, sleep, and breathe dogs, as I'm sure many of the listeners do too.
Yeah, that's why we're listening.
Yeah.
Anything that you take on these road trips, or you have at your kennel in Arizona that we should have that we've never thought about having gear-wise?
I'm sure everyone carries this to some degree, but what's really important for me is a cleanup kit. There always seems to be, when you have especially a number of dogs, one dog who gets an upset stomach or something like that, and you need to clean a kennel out at a city park, and you don't want to be caught without bleach and hand soap and hand sanitizer. You can end up getting pretty sick. And then just your typical gear, your stakeouts, and most importantly, your first aid kit.
Yeah, and in fact, it's funny you bring that up because I'm reinventing my first aid kit, both the human and the dog version of it. But the dog version is fairly tightly managed because I need to carry the dang thing all the time. I've got the usual stuff in there, including that blood clotting gauze that's now all the rage, as well as a powder version of that. Anything else along those lines that we haven't thought about that those of you who contend with wild pigs and javelinas and cactus carry all the time?
A great one for cactus is just a plastic comb. It rolls those Troia cactus right out, and you don't get them in your fingers, and you don't have to mess with pliers. And
Yeah.
then as far as the first aid kit that I carry, it's essentially an IFAT kit with a muzzle. So you can use everything in that first aid kit on humans and dogs, besides the muzzle. And it's really just, I only carry on my person, first aid for traumas, severe bleeding or gunshots. And then
Righto.
back at the truck, I have a great kit from Gun Dog Solutions, Mr. Jackson Walker.
Yeah, that's a great kit. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. That's Phil Wexler with Border to Border Outfitters. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden. Phil, we're getting down to the wire here in terms of the length of our discussion, but here's a chance for you. Be slightly diplomatic if you wish. It's up to you completely. But you work with paying clients, many of whom probably don't have a lot of experience working with a professional guide or an outfitter. You want to give us a little bit of advice on how we need to behave when we're working with a pro like you?
I hate the word pro, but there you go using it again.
Yeah.
I think this goes for anybody, whether you're hunting with your family, your friends, or a guide. Just be kind. I'm out there with you. I want to get a bird just as bad as you do, you know, and my dogs want to get birds way worse than we want to get them. And so I think it's just in life, you treat everybody with respect, and you go and you have a good time and you have a positive attitude. Your day is going to be what you make it. And that's anywhere, not just bird hunting.
I was just thinking the same thing. That is advice for life in general, isn't it? Well, there you have it. And Phil would know. He's dealt with a lot of people, and some of them are probably more fun to be around than others. Phil, one more time, border2borderoutfitters.com is where we can learn more about you guys and your adventures. I'm going to suggest, if you're interested, listeners, in getting down to Arizona, that the first thing you want to do is talk now about a year from now. Am I correct, Phil? That seems to be a hot ticket down there.
I mean, we're completely booked. Mern's Quail opens in 2 days on Friday, and we don't have another day open. So if you're interested in hunting with us, just give us a ring. We're looking to have a good year this year, and hoping for a better year next year, or all the way year after year, just get a little better and a little more birds. So
Well, it's been fun talking with you. Finally, we've been trying
yes.
to do this for a long time. I'll see you at
2 years in
Pheasant
the making.
Fest.
Yes, sir. We'll be
Yeah,
there.
and so will we. But at least this year, you don't have to bring all your dogs with you.
Yes, that's true.
Well, good enough. Be safe. Have a great season down there. And most of us are quite jealous right about now. Phil Wexler, Border to Border Outfitters, thanks again for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
Thanks, Scott. Have a good one.
And stick around, because while we digest our discussion with Phil Wexler at Border to Border Outfitters, we're also getting ready for This Land Is Your Land and a public access tip for those of you who are interested in, let's call it, filling out your quail life list. In the meanwhile, though, let me remind you that Dogtra has a great discount set up for you if you listen to the Upland Nation podcast. Whether you're buying that T&B dual collar that will control two dogs with one handheld and two sets of buttons, or anything else, including the Pathfinder GPS with a cell phone capability, if you will, it runs through your cell phone. All of those, 10% discount, just use the code SLUN10 and you'll take 10% off that price. Hey, there's an amplification of a notification, which is an exclamation for that great Dogtra offer. So check it out. It's all at dogtra.com. I used to get this question a lot, and then it started coming back and around about 3 4 months ago, and I thought I'd just remind everybody, if you're looking to fill out your quail life list, This Land Is Your Land has got you figured out. Oregon is where you come for that mountain quail. The national forests in the Coast Range west of the towns of Grants Pass and Medford are probably the densest populations of mountain quail in the United States. I've hunted that country on my own, which is a big challenge because it's thick and the birds don't hold still. You're better off with a close working flushing dog than anything else. But there are guides that will take you out there, and quite a bit of that land is worth taking a guide to because he's done all the scouting for you. Again, mountain quail west of Grants Pass in Medford, Oregon, if you're looking to fill your tag in that world. And the good news is you don't even need a tag, just a plain old hunting license is all you need. That land is your land, and it's free to access. One more reminder, there's a 30-day guarantee on anything you have custom fitted from ESPAmerica.com. That's the hearing protection folks that I like. One reason is the custom fit. The other reason is if you don't like them, you can send them back and Jack will take good care of you. Learn more about the guarantee. Shop all the products at ESPAmerica.com. Well, I don't know about you, but I learned a lot talking with my friend Phil Wexler. Yeah, we've been trying to get together for 2 years now since we both met at Pheasant Fest for the first time. And we're both going, and maybe you're going too, so watch out. We might be doing something from the Pheasant Fest on the podcast. In the meanwhile, thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Please leave us a review or a rating wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to learn more about what we're doing and contribute to the show in one or more ways, go to the Upland Nation Facebook page or the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page. They're both available 24/7. I hope you'll watch Wing Shooting USA, the television show, as well. If you'd like a question answered on the show, or if you'd like to make a suggestion, send me an email, scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com. I'll answer every single email I get. I make that promise to you as payback for listening to this podcast. Wherever you're headed next, you enjoy yourself. You take good care of your friends, the environment, and especially your dogs. Hope to see you in the field real soon. Thanks for listening.